From WBUR in Boston, I'm Bill Littlefield, and this is NPR's Only a Game. Will the Mitchell Report fallout create hot stove meltdown? Ahead on Only a Game, making sense of the relative silence the week after the naming of over 80 Major League players in that report. Also, the Packers prepare for a return to the Super Bowl. Lord Licorice and Queen Frostine visit Boston, and the latest NHL felony news. Also ahead, Barry Bonds visits Bedford Falls, or maybe it's George Bailey visiting San Francisco.
Merry Christmas, Belco headquarters! Season's greetings, you beautiful old federal courthouse! Merry Christmas, Yankee Stadium!
Stay tuned. This is Only a Game. I'm Bill Littlefield. The Mitchell Report on the use of performance-enhancing drugs by Major League Baseball players became public 10 days ago. Since then, 8 of the players named in the report have acknowledged their use of human growth hormone or steroids. One of the most accomplished players named in the report, pitcher Roger Clemens, continues to deny that he broke the rules. So far, only one team, the Baltimore Orioles, has officially responded to the Mitchell Committee's findings and recommendations. Joining me now is Baltimore Sun reporter Childs Walker. Childs, welcome to Only a Game.
Thank you very much.
The Orioles organization either employs or has employed 19 of the players named in the Mitchell report. Is that why the Orioles have called for people to, quote, resist the temptation to accept collective judgments based on unsubstantiated allegations?
Well, I would hesitate to read too much into the motivation for why they put out the statement simply because, I mean, they sort of let the statement stand for itself. I think you can draw some implication from that part that you read that they were uncomfortable with the way that some of the players were put into the report. They probably felt that they were put in on somewhat flimsy grounds.
People conversant in public relations and image polishing have suggested that public figures, whether athletes or not, in situations like this, should limit the damage to their reputations by admitting their mistakes and then counting on the public's inclination to forgive them. But what about athletes who really haven't done anything wrong?
Yeah, and I mean, that's an interesting question. And I've talked to a lot of these sort of image consultants, you know, during the steroids era, and they say if there's something there, you should come out and admit it right away. They also do encourage you, if you really are innocent, to, you know, defend yourself vigorously, you know, not to sort of wait. Maybe people believe you, but you know, maybe they won't, but at least you have sort of tried to get ahead of the story and, you know, have asserted strongly where you're coming from.
Do you have a sense of how fans of the Orioles in general are feeling about the Mitchell report and sort of Baltimore's baseball future?
In a lot of ways, I think people are more dispirited here about the fact that the team has been losing for 10 straight years now. It did prompt some sort of gallows humor along the lines of, you know, well, imagine how bad they would have been over the last 10 years if they hadn't been using performance enhancers. but other than that, I mean, it's sort of just another unfortunate episode in a long series of unfortunate episodes with this franchise.
Childs Walker writes for the Baltimore Sun. Childs, thank you very much for speaking.
Yeah, thank
with
you
me.
Very much for having me.
Baseball hasn't been the only game recently besmirched. Former Atlanta Falcons quarterback Michael Vick is serving time for his involvement in a dogfighting operation. Before the current NBA season began, the league fired a referee for betting on games he was officiating. Joining me now is Dave Zirin, who writes for The Nation. His most recent book is Beyond the Terror Dome, The Pain, Politics, and Promise of Sports. Dave, welcome back to the program.
Hey, great to be here. Thank you.
Despite the conviction of Michael Vick, the imminent trial of Barry Bonds, and various other negative news about our games, people continue to attend the games. They watch them on TV. They're buying players' jerseys in ever-increasing numbers. Do people just not care that their record breakers are also breaking the law?
Well, I think people care, but I also think that people have grown profoundly cynical about sports. Now, of course, with sports, to me, there's something particularly poignant about that cynicism because sports really is supposed to be a place, I mean, in theory, that's absent of cynicism. That's really a place where we rediscover the child in all of us, not the cynical, encrusted adult.
Can you think of anything that might cause great numbers of people to turn away from baseball or football or basketball?
I think every sport except for football needs to take a long, hard look at the National Hockey League and think about where hockey was 20 years ago compared to where it is today. I mean, there is no guarantee. There's nothing written in the Constitution that says the major sports of the United States must forever remain the major sports of the United States.
It's interesting to me that you say football, or you seem to be suggesting that football is immune.
Yeah.
How has it achieved that status?
I believe it's the only professional sport that doesn't suffer from a crisis of overproduction. I mean, it's like a 16 or 17-week, really, miniseries. It's like the Thornbirds for men. You know, every fall, you know, you've got 4 months in which to just engage with this incredibly rollicking soap opera that is the NFL. Every other sport, it's ridiculous. And you poll players or fans, they tell you, yeah, 162 games for Major League Baseball, that's a little long for me, for my attention span.
Let's get back just for a minute to the whole business of what can happen to even a popular sport. To what extent has the Mitchell Report and the fallout from the report endangered baseball in those terms?
I mean, I think it's playing with fire to some degree, because if you had asked fans before the Mitchell Report comes out, and there was a very good AP story that dealt with this explicitly, most fans would say that they don't want or need a Mitchell Report to have their quote-unquote faith restored in the game. So then it had asked the question, why did Selig feel the need to do this in the first place? And what I've argued in my writing is that this had much more to do with laying a claim to Congress that, hey, we are taking care of our own house. Yet what's been so crazy is that I feel like the report has had the opposite effect. Like, instead of assuaging Congress, it's actually stirring up all the old hornet's nests all over again. So all this is going to create is just a horrible sideshow that I think is going to go on for several years. And that has the capacity, definitely, to turn off the casual fan.
Dave Zirin is the author of Welcome to the Terror Dome. Dave, thank you very much for speaking with me.
Oh, my privilege, Bill.
Last week's Mitchell Report undoubtedly had many people wishing they could see what the sports world would look like without the presence of performance-enhancing drugs. People like home run king Barry Bonds, who may go on trial as late as next Yuletide for obstruction of justice and perjury stemming from his grand jury testimony in the Balco investigation. And so Only a Game presents a retelling of It's a Wonderful Life, with some names changed to protect innocent fictional characters. Our drama begins at the Toll House in tiny Testosterone Falls as Barry talks with Clarence Softbody, a 53-year-old career minor league first baseman with the Anaheim Angels.
If it hadn't been for me, everybody'd be a lot better off. My wife, my family, Major League Baseball, the fans, my mistress, everyone.
So you still think that if you hadn't taken steroids that everyone would be happier, eh?
Oh, it would have been better if I'd never used the clear or the cream.
Oh, you mustn't say things like that. Think of your baseball career. Wait a minute. That's an idea. All right, you've got your wish. You've never enhanced your performance.
What did you say?
Your head is three sizes smaller, and you're a skinny base-stealing golden glover in Pittsburgh. No worries, no expectations, no Jeff Nowitzki looking for you with the sheriff.
Well, that's the doggondest thing. My hat keeps slipping over my eyes. That hasn't happened since I was a kid.
Your hair's growing back, too. And you seem much happier, much less prone to knock the Velveeta out of some hapless beat writer.
Well, what do you know about that? What's happened?
You've gotten your wish. You've never taken steroids, Barry. Come on, I'll show you. Let's go to the Balco Labs.
Wow, it's still here. Just as lively as ever. Go on, sit down, Clarence. Balco founder Victor Conti's a good friend of mine. And here's my trainer, Greg Anderson, at the juice bar. Hello, Greg.
You want some human growth hormone?
No, Greg. Victor, where is he?
Look, Victor's cutting a new record with Tower of Power. Or squealing to Dick Pound or something. You want some flaxseed oil or don't you?
Well, all right, as long as it's just flaxseed oil and doesn't have anything else in it.
Okay, what's yours, Tinkerbell?
I was just thinking of a flaming EPO punch. No, wait a minute, I've got it. THG, heavy on the cinnamon and light on the clove. Off with you, me lad, and be lively.
Hey, look, mister, we serve performance enhancers in here for men who want to get juiced fast. And we don't need any characters around to give the joint atmosphere. Is that clear? Or do I have to slip you my left for a convincer?
Greg, just give him the same as mine. He's okay.
Okay.
Well, what's the matter with him? Greg's usually as quiet as a dormouse.
Well, yes, when he's avoiding grand jury testimony. But he can talk now because you never took steroids. You'll see a lot of strange things from now on. Oh, somebody's just made it.
Made what?
Every time you hear a bell ring, it means that some athlete somewhere has just scored a nine-figure deal.
That does it. Out you two pixies go, through the door or out the window. Would you show these gentlemen to the door?
Look, pal, what's going on here?
I told you, you've never taken performance enhancers. You bat eighth in the Pirates lineup. You have 278 career home runs and a lifetime batting average of .243. There's no controversy and no legal trouble. No one wants your autographed memorabilia, and your salary is hardly inflated. You can't get arrested. You've been given a great gift, Barry, a chance to see what the world would be like without a troubled, juiced-up egomaniac like you.
Well, Clarence, I've seen that now, and I think it sucks.
Oh, you do, do you? Well, then my job here is done. Goodbye, Barry.
Clarence, where are you? Help me, Clarence. Get me back. I don't care what happens at the trial. Get me back to my fame and my fortune and my memorabilia business. Help me, Clarence, please. Please. I want to generate revenue again. I want to generate revenue. Please, God, let me generate revenue.
Hey, Barry, you all right?
Get out of here, Balco lead investigator Jeff Nowitzki, or I'll hit you again.
What the Sam Hill you yelling for, Barry?
Jeff, you know me?
Know you? Are you kidding? I could see your huge gleaming dome from a mile away through this raging blizzard. At night! Hey, your biceps will rip clean through your overcoat. Are you sure you're all right?
My biceps, Jeff! My biceps! Victor's Jib Candies! Victor's Jib Candies! They're here, Jeff! What do you know about that? Ha-ha! Merry Christmas, Balco headquarters! Season's greetings, you beautiful old federal courthouse! Merry Christmas, Yankee Stadium!
And so all was well in Testosterone Falls. The hard-working townspeople took up a collection for Barry and delivered basket loads of cash directly to his winter estate, where his godfather, Willie Mays, was heard to say,
"To my godson, the richest man in town."
What's that, Barry? It looks like a calendar with the initials BB on the cover.
Why, that's a Christmas present from a very dear friend of mine.
Look, Barry. Teacher says every time a bell rings, an athlete ropes in a nine-figure contract.
That's right. That's right. Attaboy, Clarence.
Our skit was performed by the only a game Smell of the Growth Hormone, Roar of the Crowd players, with Walter Dixon as Barry Bonds, Peter Lydotes as Clarence Softbody, Gabe O'Connor as Balco lead investigator Jeff Nowitzki, Rachel Paste as Kimberly Bell, Michael Garth as Willie Mays, Gary Wallach as trainer Greg Anderson, and the delightful Marley Wallach as Zuzu. It's 19 minutes past the hour. Getting married at home plate is no big deal. Lots of baseball fans have done it. But Jeannie Dulski and Jamie Kniddle pushed the Association of Matrimony and Sports to an extreme when they got married earlier this month at the Hazleton Municipal Airport in Pennsylvania. Following the ceremony, Dulski and Kniddle climbed into a plane, ascended to 10,000 feet, and jumped out. Hazleton Mayor Lou Barletta, who joined the skydivers in wedlock, called the ceremony the most unusual he'd ever performed. And then, for reasons that remain mysterious, he said, "I'm sure my wife would like to see me jump out of an airplane without a parachute."
Well, and what's to be the reason for becoming man and wife? Is it love that brings you here, or love that gives you life? For if loving is the answer, then who is the giving?
I'm Bill Littlefield, ahead on Only a Game. St. Vincent de Lombardi gifts Wisconsin with an eternally youthful quarterback. But first, a discussion of all things NHL with Helene Elliott of the Los Angeles Times. Helene, welcome back.
Thank you.
I had hoped to begin our conversation with talk of the Detroit Red Wings' success, but this week's NHL headlines were just dominated by thuggish behavior. Let's start with Chris Simon's 30-game suspension after his skate blade attack on Pittsburgh forward Jarkko Ruutu during a game last Saturday. Ruutu was down on one knee, and this kid Simon stomped on him. This was practicing surgery without a license. What kind of thing prompts that behavior?
Well, this was only his eighth suspension.
Only
so,
eight,
you know,
yeah, okay.
You know, you got to give the guy another chance here. It was reprehensible. It absolutely was. And, you know, you can see it on your friendly YouTube site and anywhere else that you care to look, if you care to look. Yeah, it was reprehensible, absolutely. And 30 games was absolutely appropriate. And there were people who would argue, and I couldn't disagree, that maybe the guy should have been thrown out of the league altogether because, again, eight suspensions, that's a few too many.
Simon wasn't the only guy suspended this week, although it certainly his suspension was the most sensational. In the wake of suspensions earlier this year, shouldn't players sort of know better?
Well, you could say that about players in a lot of sports, and I think what it comes down to is that the unions, the players' union, and particularly in the NHL's case, has been so zealous in protecting the offenders, they have not protected the victims. And yes, the offenders deserve due process, no question, but it comes to a point where you're protecting the people who are doing these things against the innocent victims of these things, and there's something wrong in the balance here. It's just not computing.
On Tuesday, a Canadian court released Todd Bertuzzi's testimony that his hit on Steve Moore was ordered by then-Vancouver Canucks head coach Mark Crawford. Should Moore win his suit or settle with Bertuzzi and the Canucks, will that help curtail out-and-out goonishness in the league?
I'm actually not sure Crawford's involved in the suit, but no, it's never going to curtail goonishness. There's always going to be goonishness. There's always going to be the mentality of, well, you hit our guy, our best guy, we're going to hit your best guy. And again, to attempt to be fair here, if Crawford said you've got to pay the price, that can be interpreted in so many ways. I mean, coaches habitually will say you've got to pay the price, meaning you've got to take a hit. And that's true in any sport. I mean, the quarterback may have to take a hit, but, you know, you get back up again and you take one for the team and all that. This is a very complicated case. It gets into the hockey culture, the whole thing of retaliation. It just has so many different levels to it. And I'll say it here. I mean, I'm not a Todd Bertuzzi fan. I just don't really like the guy. And you can make a case that he just, you know, lost it that night. And the whole attitude of the organization was, well, you know, we have to get this payback for the guy who, because Moore had hurt one of their players in a previous game. Mm-hmm. And you can examine the whole hockey culture and put the whole hockey culture at fault if you really want to.
You know, Helene, I'm getting a little tired of this. What do you say we talk some hockey?
Hey? Eh?
Marian Gavarik of the Minnesota Wild had a pretty good month on Thursday night.
Yeah, I mean, he's just so talented. He's had some problems with injuries throughout his career, but this guy is just a pure skill player. And even if you don't know much about hockey, you can just sense, you know, just the skills that he has and the speed at which he can do things. It's just incredible.
Well, the particular demonstration of it was that he scored 5 goals in one game. I was trying to think of the last time I scored 5 goals in one game. I was 16. The other team was made up of 6-year-olds, and they all had the flu.
That would be the only time you scored the 5 goals, wouldn't it? Uh-huh. And then their mothers came into your house and complained.
Yeah, that's why I never did it again. Detroit Red Wings are the league's best team. They got 53 points. How do we explain Detroit's early season success?
Detroit has some incredibly skilled players. I mean, Zetterberg, maybe the best player in the league right now. Pavel Datsyuk, Nicholas Lidstrom is not showing any signs of age. I mean, the guy is an incredible defenseman. But in Detroit, I think that, you know, it's not good enough to have a good regular season. You need to get 2-3 rounds into the playoffs, and they didn't last season, and we've seen attendance fall off in Detroit, which is really pretty astonishing. They had an incredibly long sellout streak, and then their regular season sellout streak ended this season. They've been drawing crowds of like 16,000 and 17,000. Fans there are not happy. It's not good enough to win games in the regular season. They want to win playoff games.
Ottawa is currently the best team in the East. The Senators, of course, have a recent history of making the playoffs easily and then finding themselves out of the playoffs just as easily. Will that be the case again this year?
I'm not convinced about them, to be honest with you. We saw them in the Stanley Cup Finals last year when they played the Ducks last season, and frankly, I thought there were three or four Western teams that could have beaten Ottawa very easily. Because Ottawa is the Canadian capital and it's an eastern city, I think the Senators get built up to be far better than they are by the eastern concentrated media. I was not all that impressed with them, and they've had some goaltending issues too, but let's address this again in April. Let's see where they are in April and see if they've learned anything from losing in the finals like they did.
Minnesota and Dallas look as if they could give Detroit a run come playoff time. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people picked San Jose to do really well this season, and I'm not going to pick the Sharks to win anything, frankly. I don't think they have the guts to win a playoff series and to go far in the playoffs. They'll have to do it before I'll say, okay, you proved it. It's been an interesting season. I mean, the Ducks have struggled in this post-Stanley Cup hangover, and last week they got Scott Niedermayer back, which immediately has shown some benefits. I mean, their penalty killing is 14 for 14 since he came back, and that's no coincidence. And just the confidence he gives all the other defensemen and the minutes he can play, you know, they don't have to run some of these other defensemen into the ground because he's there to take up so many minutes. I think the second half of the season is going to be terrific.
Have you got a candidate for a team that's playing possum at this point and will come on strong as the winter goes on?
It could be the Ducks if they can figure out how to get some second-line scoring. You know, they've had no problem with their first line, but they've really been struggling. The aforementioned Mr. Bertuzzi has not quite fit into their plans here, being the square peg in the triangular hole here. And they traded Andy McDonald because they figured that his style didn't go with Bertuzzi's. And frankly, I would have preferred that they traded Bertuzzi and kept Andy McDonald, but I'm not the general manager, and they didn't ask me.
Helene Elliott covers the coolest sport for the LA Times, and she's only a game's herald of the hockey holidays. Thanks again, Helene.
Thank you.
So let's remember it's December before we drop the gloves. Even goons like yourself deep down need to be loved. So lower your high stick and remember jolly old Saint Nick. Hey, you big idiot, happy holidays. Hockey holidays. Hockey holidays. Hockey holidays.
Hockey holidays, everybody.
Tomorrow at Chicago's Soldier Field, the Green Bay Packers will try to stay in the running for the NFC's best record and earn home field advantage through the playoffs. Their arch rivals, the Bears, went to last year's Super Bowl but have already been eliminated from playoff contention. There has been no shortage of attention paid to quarterback Brett Favre's renaissance this season, but the Packers' often overlooked cast of supporting characters has been just as important to their success. And even though football fans in Foxborough, Dallas, and Indiana may not have noticed those players, the Cheeseheads have. Mitch Tyke of Milwaukee Public Radio reports.
Before this season began, many people, some Green Bay fans included, thought this might be the one Packers highlight they could expect this year.
Brett Favre just 2 yards away from eclipsing Dan Marino. He needs 1 yard to tie. First and 10 from the 38. And Favre's pass is caught by Donald Driver, and there it is. Brett Favre has now passed for 4 yards in his career than any other quarterback in National Football League history.
But to the surprise of many around the country and around Wisconsin, the buzz around Lambeau Field this year has come from more than just the beer at the tailgate parties.
St. Vince Lombardi is with us.
Yes.
It's especially good for father and daughter Carl and Liz Sonnenberg, who on a recent Sunday were on their first pilgrimage to the frozen tundra. For Liz, the experience of actually coming to Lambeau and eating brats in the parking lot put her in touch with what she thinks it really means to be a Packers fan.
I don't know, it's about sharing the love, you know, for the Packers and for the fans. And you know, I've lived a lot of places. I grew up in Minnesota and lived in Denver for 8 years, and now I live in San Antonio, and there's just Packer fans everywhere, and everyone's just so great. And willing to share, and it's just an amazing experience. You know, everybody's brought together with their love for the Packers.
Like everyone in the parking lots and spilling into the working-class neighborhood streets around Lambeau, the Sonnenbergs have their own theories about why things are coming together for the Packers this year.
When you build a franchise, you've got to build it on a combination of great veteran talent plus the up-and-coming draft. And the Packers have been known over the course of time to build teams through the draft. And every once in a while, they go out and get a good player like a Charles Woodson or a Reggie White. And it just about says it all, I think.
Of course, it doesn't hurt to have the guiding hand of a future Hall of Fame quarterback under center.
Brett's really able to show what he can do if he's got protection, you know. And everyone was saying that he should retire after last year. Oh, he's old. No, he's not old. You know, he's still a great player with an amazing arm, you know, and just needs some people out there protecting him.
The Packers' 12 wins so far this year are the most for the team since 1997, when it won 13 en route to the Super Bowl. Last season, the Packers needed 4 straight wins just to end the season at 500. But punter John Ryan says the strong end to last season set the stage for this season, the second with head coach Mike McCarthy.
Well, I think this really all started to take place when Coach McCarthy came in 2 years ago, when everything started to kind of change. It was his team from the start, and he kind of molded this. You know, it's kind of his master plan right now, and everyone kind of see it coming into effect, and it's pretty impressive to watch, I think.
It's been a domino theory of improvements. The offensive line has protected Brett Favre, who has more time to throw to more experienced receivers. The receivers, in turn, have drawn more attention from the defense, and now the Packers' running game is coming into its own, specifically Ryan Grant, who spent all last season on injured reserve with the Giants. He came to Green Bay in September in a trade that few noticed and has become the team's leading rusher. Grant says, as a rookie, lack of job security is an excellent motivator.
That's the nature of the game. You know, you're only as good as your last performance, so, you know, every week I got to come out and just prove to myself and prove to everything, you know, once again that we can get it done. And, you know, and that's how you should want. I'm a competitor.
If Grant were closing in on 1,000 yards playing in New York, there's a good chance he'd be a household name. But he's toiling a couple hours away from the closest large city, and so he gets few national headlines. And that's the way it is for most of the team. Although they're 12-2, only 4 Packers were selected to the Pro Bowl. One of them is wide receiver Donald Driver, who, in response to a reporter's question, said, yes, it's possible to win the NFC North and still take opponents in the press off guard.
Before the season started, I told people that we'll be a good team. And I told them that, you know, the NFC North title, we will get it back. And we proved that. So we're surprising. Every week we play the game, we're surprising some people, even you.
The Packers' last loss was an injury-filled game at Dallas in November. But analysts say the Cowboys' win wasn't really a blueprint for how to beat the Packers. Howie Magner is a sports columnist in Milwaukee. He says if the Packers can just get to the Super Bowl, they'll surprise their AFC counterpart.
I think people have shown you a blueprint of how to beat the Patriots. You have a very good pass rush and pretty good cornerbacks to cover the receivers downfield. You have a pretty good passing game. Does that remind you of anybody? It's the Green Bay Packers. So if the Packers can get by the Cowboys, hey, it's there for the taking.
On the other hand, the Patriots, Cowboys, or even the Colts might have something to say about that. For now, Packers fans hope St. Vincent can get the team into the playoffs with a healthy Brett Favre. For Only a Game, I'm Mitch Teich in Green Bay.
Go, Pat, go!
Let's go, find your seat.
To view Mitch Teich's Packers photo gallery, please visit onlyagame.org.
They traded for Brett Favre, and then picked up Reggie White, and thus was built a winning team. The Pack is back tonight.
You're listening to Only a Game. In an email that might more appropriately have been written during a less festive season, Paul Laskovich writes, Charlie Pierce is so mean-spirited. Doesn't he ever have a kind word for anyone? Well, it's almost Christmas, maybe this week. Eric Edlund, a WBUR listener, emailed to say, I listen to your show regularly, though you and I disagree on the greatness of cycling as a sport. I'd like to point out that in comparison to the weak tongue-lashing baseball has received from George Mitchell, cycling has done more than any other sport to counter doping, taking back the yellow jersey when tests have shown unfair play. Dan Weintraub, who hears the program courtesy of New Hampshire Public Radio, also had steroids on his mind. Roger Clemens, Barry Bonds, Marion Jones, et al., he wrote, these men and women have sacrificed their health and futures in order to fulfill the dreams of fans and satisfy the avarice of owners. We are parasites living off of the exploits of these warriors. And when these warriors turn out to be human, we turn our anger and vengefulness toward them and destroy them and their families. Taking a less apocalyptic slant on the same topic, Joel Herskowitz, a WBUR listener, wrote, in a sport which involves a stitched spheroid, some players relied on a steroid. Now fans of all ages have their own kind of rages as their trust in the games has been destroyed. I love that destroyed at the end. Michael Mahone, who listens to Only a Game on WRVO in Oswego, New York, decried our coverage of the Mitchell Report. Your bias toward the Red Sox has been obvious for years, he wrote. I know people hate the Yankees because of past successes, but there is a bias in this investigation and in Major League Baseball by C-League and Company. I am informing WRVO that I will no longer be a member as long as your show is on Saturday morning. Kelly Salamone, who hears the program on WAMC in Albany, weighed in on the steroid issue with a question. Is there something different about the game or culture of basketball that steroid use isn't widespread? She asked. And finally, of the music that ran at the end of the annual gift guide last week, Lindsay Morcillo wrote, the guitar rock fa-la-la-la-la-la song had me laughing so hard I was crying. What is the name of the artist and where can I get it? That would be Deck the Halls by Ted Nugent, and it's on a 1998 compilation called Merry Axmas, Volume 2. Write us at Only a Game, WBUR, 890 Commonwealth Avenue, Boston, Massachusetts, 02215. Leave a message on the listener line by calling 617-353-1860 or contact us through the website onlyagame.org. It's 22 and a half minutes before the hour.
Support for Only a Game comes from the listeners of WBUR Boston. Kauffman, the foundation of entrepreneurship, celebrating entrepreneurs who start businesses and change the world, on the web at kauffman.org. Ann and John Herman, celebrating the Breakthrough Collaborative, involving middle school students in learning and older students in teaching at breakthroughcollaborative.org. And the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation, helping to build a more just future for the nation and the world at macfound.org. This is NPR, National Public Radio.
In order to celebrate the holidays and promote Thailand as a vacation destination for golfers, a hotel in Bangkok dressed an employee as Santa Claus and had him build a Christmas tree out of 19,888 golf balls. How this exceptional achievement will encourage golfers to travel to Thailand is an interesting question. A perhaps more interesting question is what that worker would have shouted should the Christmas tree made of golf balls have begun to shift while he was building it, hence developing into a potential hazard for anyone trying to walk through the lobby. Four, perhaps, or perhaps 19,888!
Watch my ball slice, can I tee off twice? Why's my golfing so bad? I just remember my favorite golf names. Then I don't feel so sad.
I'm Bill Littlefield. Coming up on Only a Game, Lord Licorice, Grandma Nut, Plumpy the Troll, and the giggling gamesters they inspire. But first, I'm joined by Charlie Pierce for a discussion of the week's news. Hello, Charlie.
I do not know anything about Plumpy the Troll, nor do I care to, but I'll listen anyway.
I hope you will. We've had over a week to witness the Mitchell Report fallout. Has anything thus far surprised you?
Surprised me? No. You know, once again, the biggest story coming out of the Mitchell Report are not the prospective solutions to the problem, but the people who were involved in the problem in the first place, namely Roger Clemens. All of the reaction seems to swirl around him in one way or another.
Pete Rose said this week that steroid users had made a mockery of baseball. And this just in, editors of the Victoria's Secret catalog decry use of suggestive images in advertising. Where do we start on this one?
There are two things I wish would go away. Number one, Jose Canseco, brave truth teller.
Mm-hmm.
And two, Pete Rose, unjust victim. Look, I've always thought Pete Rose belonged in the Hall of Fame. You know me, Bill. My attitude is everybody belongs in the Hall of Fame, okay?
Well, especially the guy who got the most hits.
But this is Pete Rose, you know, saying, look, what these guys did is worse than what I did. No, Pete, the reason that people aren't allowed to gamble in baseball is because they cannot be guaranteed you're giving your best effort. Say what you will about the steroid users, they were trying to give their best effort.
All right, Charlie, will congressional hearings straighten all this steroids business out?
Well, I mean, it was the congressional hearings that broke the ice in the first place and that made the Mitchell report possible. They can't hurt. You know, certainly if Clemens shows up, there'll be a big, you know, big whoop-de-doo and nothing will come. I will almost bet nothing will come of it. This is the third stage. The first stage was Congress telling baseball, clean this up or we will. Here comes Mitchell saying, okay, this is how we're going to clean it up. This is Congress patting Bud Selig on the head, you know, raising a little bit more dust about the players and saying, you know, good boy, go home and have a cookie.
Charlie, were you surprised that Curt Schilling waited almost a week to weigh in on Clemens?
You know what?
How do you suppose he restrained himself?
It's the holiday season. I'm sure he was shopping. You know, he's been campaigning for John McCain. And it's very hard to be, you know, to get yourself in shape as a right-handed pitcher when you're also Secretary of Defense. There's one thing you have to know about Curt Schilling. You want Curt Schilling to shut up, put a Bible near him. Have him put his hand on the Bible. That's when Curt Schilling shuts up about this issue.
Buffalo Bills tight end Kevin Everett said this week that he plans to attend tomorrow's home finale. Had you thought this possible after Everett sustained his spinal cord injury earlier this year?
No, it was interesting to read in the Sports Illustrated piece last week about it, about how controversial among doctors the therapy they used on him was. And what a risk those doctors in Buffalo took to get him to walk again. It's unimaginable to me what the scene of him walking out on the field in Buffalo is going to be like.
It is not unusual for the National Football League to fine players for so-called uniform violations, Charlie, but for five Atlanta Falcons to get fined in the same week, I wonder if that's a record.
Yeah, well, they all put something on their uniforms, or in one case, their faces, to show support for Michael Vick, now doing time for his dog-murdering crimes. D'Angelo Hall, Chris Houston, Roddy White, and Algie Crumpler were each fined $10,000 for that. I mean, Hall waved a poster of him as he ran on. He taped the poster to the back of the Falcons bench. It's nice to support your teammates, but this is really going above and beyond and opening the wallet a little bit too wide.
The big tuna is now a dolphin. Bill Parcells will be Miami's next executive vice president of football operations. So is vice president of football operations another way of saying head coach and general manager? And if not, what's the point?
Well, he's not going to be the head coach and general manager. He's going to get to pull the strings on the head coach and the general manager. I don't believe he will go back to the sidelines. I honestly don't believe he will go back to coaching the team. I would not want to be the guy he hires to coach the team because it will be completely impossible to run your own show. That having been said, I think he will wind up being the de facto general manager.
Charlie, we just heard a retelling of It's a Wonderful Life set in baseball, and that movie may apply to college football as well. Tom Osborne can't get out of Bedford Falls, or Lincoln, can he?
Hello, Emporium! Hello, movie house! Hello, you wonderful old Memorial Stadium!
Hello, Dirt Farms!
Yeah, he's dropping the interim title. He's going to be athletic director there till 2010, surprising absolutely no one. Help you down!
The Florida State University football team will apparently be a little bit shorthanded for the Music City Bowl on December 31st. 20-odd players caught cheating and hence not eligible to play football on that day. Are you encouraged to see how seriously FSU takes academics?
Well, I think that it's easily understood, number one, because they were caught cheating on a music history course. So naturally, they would not be allowed to play in the Music City Bowl. Unless they were forced to take a take-home exam on the question, Porter Wagoner versus Hank Snow, legend or menace?
Comment.
That having been said, please discuss. Show your work, by the way. That having been said, this is an epic moment in college sports and academics because these guys, who are obviously watered heavily before they're allowed to get out of bed in the morning, were caught cheating with the help of their tutor on an internet take-home exam in music history. Doesn't this strike you as sort of being the moment in the Thurber thing where they try to get the guy to say train? And they said, how do you get to college? And he says, I get an allowance. I mean, it's nothing ever changes. How dumb do you have to have your tutor help you cheat on a take-home internet exam?
In National Hockey League news, we learned this week that attempting to amputate somebody's leg without a license to practice medicine will get you a stiff 30-game suspension. Does the punishment fit the crime Chris Simon committed?
Well, no, because it's Chris Simon. Chris Simon should lose a year, and Chris Simon should have lost a year the last time he tried something like this. He is going in for counseling. The team says, don't worry, drugs and alcohol are not involved. He's just a crazy person.
I don't know if anybody needed more evidence that Alonzo Mourning of the Miami Heat is a tough guy, but we got it on Wednesday night, didn't we?
Yeah, he ripped the patella tendon up and probably finished his career and did not want to be carried off the floor, so he refused the stretcher. And he walked off and he said, that's not the way I envisioned myself walking off the court for the last time. If I had to crawl off the court, I would. He draped himself over the shoulder of Dwayne Wade and another teammate and walked off with a torn patella tendon. And Alonzo Mourning's had a terrific career. He started off as being this kind of very stoic, not entirely likable guy. He's gone through the kidney disease. He's done wondrous work for people with that disease and their families. This is a really nice way to end. I hope he doesn't come back.
Do you think the latest expression of dismay by fans of the New York Knicks will encourage the team's owner to finally, for goodness sake, make a personnel change?
No, you know, this is getting better and better, though. I'm starting to really like Knicks fans. They put up outside the garden an 8-foot pink slip
so that
Isaiah would get the message. But again, until they get a new owner, and they're never going to get a new owner, Isaiah's safe at least through the year.
If you're a member of the Charlotte Bobcats, how do you react when one of the owners of the team decides to join in drills at practice?
Well, if he's Michael Jordan, you watch him very carefully and try to learn from it. He went in there and started talking smack and throwing up some jump shots. Please, God, this isn't a precursor of anything except Michael's, you know, great desire to hang out with the fellas.
I just wonder, though, if I'm on that team and Michael Jordan comes down and the team is really bad and I'm thinking, my God, the owner is a better basketball player than anybody we got on the roster.
Well, I always had the same feeling I always had when I learned that James Naismith coached basketball at the University of Kansas. And I always wondered what it must be like to be the referee to blow the whistle and go traveling, and James Naismith gets up and says, no, sorry, it's not.
I made that rule.
No, I'm sorry. I have the rules right here in my pocket.
And finally, Charlie, People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals has created a special holiday memory with a cartoon of cruel treatment of a human. Have we got that about right?
Yes, there's a snow globe with Michael Vick in it with a ball and chain surrounded by prison guards and dogs demonstrating the sense of humor for which PETA has become to be known and loved across the world. Merry Christmas, guys. Have a wonderful tofu turkey.
Charlie Pierce writes for the Boston Sunday Globe magazine. He joins me each week at this time on Only a Game. Thank you, Charlie.
Merry Christmas, Mr. Potter!
You can share your comments with Only a Game by writing us, care of WBUR-FM, 890 Commonwealth Avenue, Boston, Massachusetts, 02215, or by emailing oag@wbur.bu.edu. Please let us know on which station you hear Only a Game and how to pronounce your name. You can leave comments on our listener line by calling 617-353-1860. You can visit Only a Game's website at www.onlyagame.org. Pitching In for Kids raises money to improve the lives of hospitalized children. Last weekend, the nonprofit group held a fundraiser in downtown Boston involving a classic board game that features colorful depictions of a toothsome world and the confectionery characters who reside therein. Everyone in the tournament was a winner, even those who intentionally lost. Only a Game's Monica Brady Meyerhoff reports.
Start right there, and you go all the way around. Once you get right there, you win.
For those of you who can't remember how to play Candyland or somehow missed it during your childhood, it's a simple racing board game that doesn't require any reading skills or really any skill at all. You simply pick a card and move your gingerbread man to the square on the board of that color. If you get a card with Lord Licorice or Queen Frostine, you can jump ahead to where those fictional characters live, or you might get stuck and miss a turn on a gooey gumdrop. But basically, Carol Troxell, co-founder of Pitching In for Kids, says they picked Candyland for their tournament because it's a fun family game.
We call it a tournament, but it's every kid's a winner that comes. You know, they get a prize for coming, they sit and play with their families and their friends. So everyone wins this tournament.
But even though this isn't a competition, there are still signs of cheating, taunting, and an occasional fight. At one table in the rotunda of Boston's historic Faneuil Hall Marketplace, five-year-old Brimwin Peabody is one card away from beating his mom, Carrie.
Oh, there's no more yellow, so I win.
Hey, he won again. Can you believe it? I can't believe it.
Do you see any sort of strategy you can play to win this game?
I don't, but, you know, when you're little, sometimes you can find the different cards, like the queen and stuff, and sometimes that kind of makes a difference.
You mean you can rig the deck?
Exactly. I've learned that from someone.
And have you been known to rig the deck to make the game go a little faster?
Yes, I have.
What? Mom cheats? As it turns out, she's not the only one. At the next table, the Lee family is familiar with the practice.
Double red.
Go, Brady, go. I just got the gumdrop, so I got sent back.
Val Lee is playing with her brother Brian and his three children.
Is there a way to play Candyland competitively?
Ask these two boys. Yeah, they play very competitively.
How do you guys play Candyland competitively?
Brady does. Oh, very nice.
When Sean was four, he cheated. But now he's seven, so he doesn't anymore. But when you get the special cards like the peanuts and stuff, if they get sent back, we do a do-over. That's not the regular Candyland rules.
Believe it or not, in the Candyland rules, it says you can ignore the cards that make you go backwards.
Oh. I didn't know that.
Did you know that?
The Lee family got impatient with answering my questions and turned the tables. Amazingly, I was up to the task.
How long has this game been around?
The game was started in the 1940s by a woman who had polio, and she had a disease that made her stuck in bed, and she couldn't do anything. So she invented this game so that other little kids who had polio could play it in bed.
What a great story.
I remember playing this as a little girl when I was 5 and 6 years old, and I played it with my son, who's now 26.
A few tables away, Carmela Galati stands over the table where her three children, 9-year-old Jonathan, 8-year-old Michael, and 4-year-old Isabella, play. I ask the oldest to explain his strategy.
I just try to go for the shortcuts. I try to get to the orange, one of the yellow.
So you can go up the gumdrop pass?
Yep.
Fight breaking out.
Okay, that's enough.
It's not supposed to be a violent sport.
Right.
The kids stop whacking each other when they find out they each win a prize just for playing. Candyland is a Christmastime favorite, maybe because candy canes and gingerbread are featured prominently on the game board. And in this holiday time, giving to charity and giving your child a favorable card to make the game go faster is really all in the spirit of the season. For Only a Game, I'm Monica Brady-Meyerov in Boston.
In anticipation of the holiday for which the merchants of all that is consumable, returnable, and breakable are most grateful, I am thinking of sports-related gifts that have brightened various Christmases past and the one that brought home sad mutability. As a child, I was a fan of the New York Giants, not the New York Giants of Frank Gifford and Kyle Rote, the New York Giants of Willie Mays, Whitey Lockman, Alvin Dark, Bill White, and Steve Ridzik, who was the first player to sign his name on a scorecard for me, although it wasn't at Christmas, and so perhaps that doesn't count. Anyway, somewhere in the middle 50s, my parents put a New York Giants jacket under our tree. It was black and shiny. It said Giants across the front in bright orange script. And when I pulled it on, I felt bigger than I'd be for years. I wore it until the frayed letters fell from the jacket and the cuffs rode up my wrists and the Giants were long gone to San Francisco. Under subsequent trees, there were baseballs and basketballs and once a cut-down 5-iron. There were mitts and bats and tennis rackets, too, and eventually hockey sticks. And one Christmas, there was a table hockey game in which you slid the players along the wooden ice by means of metal rods running under the table. My friends and I jammed and twirled those rods deliriously until the players were bent and all the pucks were lost under the furnace. And then we made pucks out of black tape and played some more. So it was with considerable anticipation of delight that 3.5 decades after I'd received that hockey game, I bought a similar game, though it was soccer instead of hockey, for my soccer-playing daughters. Late into that Christmas Eve, I struggled to make tab E fit into slot F so that player 5 would be upright and mobile. It would be, I was sure, worth the effort, and for a few minutes on that Christmas morning, it seemed to be. The girls were initially intrigued by how they could not only move the players up and down the field, but make their little legs actually kick the ball by pushing buttons at the ends of the rods to which the players were attached. Was there no limit to progress? Alas, the fascination was short-lived. The game never caught on. For all the kids cared, Player 5 could have fallen to the plastic turf clutching at his painted knee. Which is not to suggest that that Christmas was a failure. We were healthy and together, which is what matters most, and there were other gifts. I remember that the girls liked the clothes Santa brought them. The clothes were a success, even though neither of them got a Giants jacket. Only a Game is produced by Karen Given and Gabe O'Connor. Our technical director is John Perotti. We had help this week from Walter Dixon, Peter Lydodes, Rachel Paste, Michael Garth, and Marley Wallach. Our senior producer is Gary Wallach. If you'd like to view Mitch Tyke's Green Bay Packers photo gallery, Monica Brady Meyerhoff's Candyland photos, or listen to stories past and present, please visit onlyagame.org. To order a copy of Only a Game, call 1-800-909-9287. CDs are $15. That's 1-800-909-9287. Our final word comes from George Bailey. George Bonds. Well, it could only mean one thing. Plea bargain. I'm Bill Littlefield. Happy holidays. Thank you for listening, and I'll see you next week.
Support for Only a Game comes from the listeners of WBUR Boston, the Kellogg Foundation, helping people help themselves by investing in children, their families, and their communities on the web at WKKF.org. Ann and John Herman, celebrating the Breakthrough Collaborative involving middle school students in learning and older students in teaching at BreakthroughCollaborative.org. And the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation, helping to build a more just future for the nation and the world at MacFound.org. This is NPR, National Public Radio.